All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
This is Manny.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking a little Amazing Arizona Comic Con and just a couple of bits of comic news, but the majority of the episode is going to be our thoughts on Deadpool. So before we get to that, Jade and I attended the Amazing Arizona Comic Con in Phoenix, Arizona over this Valentine's weekend. And what did you think of the show, Jaden?
I thought it was a good show overall. It's pretty small, but I think for that size of a show, it was a pretty good comic show.
Yeah, I would agree. A lot of bargains to be had. Vendors with $3 for $1 comics, $5 for $1 comics, tons of dollar comics. Like, you know, there were several vendors that had upwards of 50 long boxes of comics for $1 each. A lot of it not sorted. You'd find big chunks of certain runs here or there, but definitely a great shopping show and a very comic-centric show. Some big names like Rob Liefeld. I feel like that's a really good get when you have Rob Liefeld, the creator of Deadpool, at your convention the weekend that the movie comes out. You know, that's pretty cool. Also, George Perez, who had a huge line. Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, had a huge line. Chad Harden was there, Ryan Otley, Charles Soule, Steve McNiven. You know, that's a big name with the Captain America Civil War movie coming out. So, yeah, definitely a comic-centric show. And a lot of, as far as cosplay goes, like, the majority was Deadpool, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Which is understandable, you know. Lots of Deadpool t-shirts, people dressed up as Deadpool. We saw a really cool Predator costume. So, yeah, a really good show. Like Jaden mentioned, a little on the smaller side. It seemed like maybe attendance was down this year. Now, we didn't go last year, but we had gone 2 years ago. And it felt like it was maybe a little bit bigger, certainly better attended. Have a feeling there were a couple other events going on in Phoenix at the same time. So I have a feeling that might have cut into attendance a little bit. Not a show that I say that you'd have to go to for more than 1 day, unless maybe you want to go like Friday and Saturday, because Friday was just like 3 to 8, so not really enough time to do everything you want to do necessarily. But if you went all day Saturday or all day Sunday, you probably could get everything done that you need to do in just the 1 day. So a good show, definitely. Be attending more Amazing Arizona Comic Cons in the future. I did sit down with a couple of comic creators and I did some interviews, and I'll be releasing those shortly. I sat down with Charles Soule. We talked about Daredevil. We talked about Star Wars. We talked about Letter 44. Always great to see Charles and talk with him. And I also sat down with Jim Zub, creator of Wayward, along with the artist Steve Cummings. Really, really great book that I feel like a lot of people haven't heard about yet. So, like I said, look for those interviews coming up later this week.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
Now, just a couple bits of comic news I want to talk about real quick. Far and away right now, DC is dominating the comic news. There's not much in the way of announcements usually at this time of year. You know, DC teased us with this image of this blue curtain instead of Rebirth. And that's pretty much speculation over that is kind of dominating the news cycle for comics right now. That and the Deadpool movie. I haven't really heard much from Marvel. Haven't seen many announcements. I kind of have a feeling that they realize the position they're in with everybody kind of focused on what exactly Rebirth is from DC. And so for that reason, they're not necessarily trying to make any announcements right now. They're trying to kind of fly under the radar. Maybe thinking that they're going to get their, their kind of day in the sun when the Captain America movie comes out. So for now, they're just kind of laying low. But like I said, the DC Rebirth teases really are dominating the news cycle. In fact, just today, Tuesday, February 16th, the solicits came out for their May books. If you go to the show notes, there's a link to Bleeding Cool that has all the solicits. There's 11 titles that are still ongoing that launched with the New 52, and those titles are reaching their 52nd issue that month. And Rebirth is supposed to take place in June, so a lot of stories lines kind of winding up, wrapping up, and we're seeing some creators already have left their books. I imagine because they're working on the new number ones of the Rebirth launches. Also, Jim Lee and Geoff Johns released a few more teaser images about Rebirth. That same picture of the curtain, Jim Lee released one that still had the word Rebirth, and underneath that, in smaller letters, it said "Not a reboot." And then Geoff Johns took that image and took it a step further and added the line, "It was never meant to be." So I take that to mean that the new 52 continuity isn't going to be thrown out. They're not. This isn't another fresh start. But rather, as we've speculated and Manny has said before, it's kind of a refocusing on the core of what makes their characters iconic and trying to get back to that classic DC feel a little bit, perhaps.
I'll see that.
Yeah, also one last bit of news I want to mention is Marguerite Bennett apparently is going to be the new Wonder Woman writer as that series goes bi-weekly. So I'm kind of disappointed in that. You know, not that I don't read any books that Marguerite Bennett puts out. I think she does a great job on the DC Bombshells title, but I was just a huge fan of what Meredith and David Finch were doing on the book. And you know, David Finch certainly isn't the fastest of artists, so to expect him to do the book bi-weekly is you know, that's impossible for him. But I kind of was hoping Meredith would stay on the book. I'm not sure if perhaps because David was leaving or wasn't going to be doing every issue of the book, if she decided to leave, it was her choice. If she just prefers to work on something else with her husband, if they're moving to another title, you know, that's all up in the air at this point. Not really sure, but I guess we'll see what happens. Certainly, as I said, DC's dominating the comic news cycle right now, just with all the speculation and everything's up in the air. I was kind of hoping that when the solicits were released today, we'd get more of an idea, more of a hint of what Rebirth, you know, some solid details and facts rather than just rumors about what Rebirth is going to be all about. Simply because Geoff Johns had tweeted either late Sunday night or early Monday morning that there was some significant Rebirth news coming this week. So perhaps later in the week, maybe tomorrow or Thursday or Friday, maybe we'll get some details. I was hoping it would be today, but it wasn't to be so. Guys, have anything to add about any of the Rebirth things now that we've had some time to think about it?
I thought it was actually pretty funny, the pictures that they tweeted. I think that they've probably been getting a lot of, "Oh man, another reboot. Oh, I can't believe the DC's doing another reboot," and all this stuff. And I think that that's probably why they released those images, to say this is absolutely not a reboot. So I thought that was pretty funny when I saw that article.
Manny, you have anything to add?
Yeah, there's just so many rumors flying around. It's just really hard to really form a real educated opinion, for me at least. But it's nice to see that they're out there, active, and kind of, no, this is not a reboot. But, you know, lastly, what I like is that, hey, at least a couple of the books are going to be making it to number 52. That's kind of uncommon nowadays, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I think one of the longest running titles right now, you know, it's clearly Independent Spawn is up in the 220s, 230s now, maybe, and Savage Dragon is up there as well. You know, when you think about Invincible, to me, that's not a book I think about as being a long running title. You know, it seems relatively recent to me. Same with Walking Dead. You know, it seems like a relatively recent phenomenon, but those books are up above 125. I mean, Walking Dead just had 150. Come out, and I think Invincible's closing in on 130 issues, so it's crazy to think those are, like, you know, epically long runs now from Image. So interesting.
Sorry, Tommy. You know I wouldn't do this if I had any other choice. But he's my friend. So was I.
Let's talk a little movie news before we get to our Deadpool review. An article came out today, and it was talking about Warner Brothers is already worried, is the word that they used, about the reception of Batman versus Superman. There was an episode on Hitfix Fandemonium last week, and it was basically saying that some of the internal executives and other people that have seen the movie, it's not what they expected, not what they necessarily think is best. And I don't know how much of this has been fueled by the success of Deadpool and kind of that irreverent tone that it has, whereas, you know, that's a sharp contrast to Batman versus Superman, which takes itself very seriously. So I have a feeling that some of the execs over at Warner Brothers are feeling right now like they wish that they had maybe flip-flopped Suicide Squad and Batman versus Superman, because I think Suicide Squad, it falls much more in line to that irreverent, humorous kind of style. It seems like maybe it's kind of halfway between the seriousness of Batman versus Superman and something like Deadpool, which, you know, is breaking records left and right. But it's certainly too late to change now. It comes out in less than a month. And if it doesn't, I mean, it's almost like they've pinned so much on this movie that unless it makes, you know, $1 billion and you know, is one of the top five grossing movies of all time, it's going to be seen as a failure. In a way, I'm kind of not surprised. I mean, when a studio kind of pins the future of this franchise, their superhero franchise going forward with the Justice League movie and all these solo movies from some of the Justice League members on the success of one movie, you can't help but be nervous, especially when, I mean, the studio's invested so much, you know? And so, you know, I don't know if worried is the right word. Perhaps nervous, and understandably so, would be a more appropriate word. But the bottom line is, if it doesn't succeed and they do decide to make some changes, I think that David Goyer goes, Zack Snyder goes, and, you know, maybe even Christopher Nolan, because, you know, his kind of forte is this dark, gritty sensibility. And with, like I said, with the success of Deadpool, people are thinking that that's not the way to go with these superheroes. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I don't think that Zack Snyder's a bad director necessarily. You know, I've said over and over how I feel about David Goyer, you know, and I just, you know, it bears repeating that I just don't think he understands the core of these characters. To go dark and gritty, you know, constantly, it works for somebody like Batman. I don't feel like it works for a character like Superman. It just doesn't work. So them leaving and Warner Brothers taking a little bit different direction, I think wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. It may be what the movies need at this point. But of course, if it's a runaway success, then you're probably going to see the same people in charge going forward. But I don't expect that to happen, actually. I do think it's going to maybe not be as successful as they need it to be. And so, and the rumor is that if that's the case, that instead of the filming for a Justice League movie starting on time, perhaps it would get flip-flopped and the solo Ben Affleck Batman movie would take its place. And, you know, that might be for the best. Supposedly these same people who've seen Batman and Superman already think that one of the strongest things about the movie is Ben Affleck's portrayal as Batman, and so they seem to have, you know, faith in that. So flip-flopping it with the Justice League movie as far as what comes out first would make sense. But then also the article goes on to say that they also felt that Jesse Eisenberg's Luther was another strength of the movie. So how much stock can you really put into what they think if you know, that's their opinion? granted, I haven't seen the movie, but, you know, we all feel like Jesse Eisenberg is a sniveling little runt who couldn't even lift Lex Luthor's underwear, let alone portray him on film. So, what are your guys' thoughts on this? Did you even know anything about... I think you mentioned it to me, Jaden, that you'd heard something.
Yeah, I did. I think that Warner Brothers is taking a huge chance with this Batman versus Superman. It's like, when Marvel did this, they had Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and Captain America and the Hulk, and they had all these movies already that kind of established that they could make money with these superhero movies, and really all we've had is Man of Steel, and Deadpool actually outperformed Man of Steel in its opening weekend. So it's just, I think that that's the main thing that's making them nervous. It's just that they're, if it doesn't pass, I think that if it doesn't pass Deadpool in opening weekend numbers, I think that it's a huge failure, and I think that that's really what they're scared of.
What about you, Manny? Thoughts?
Well, I mean, they're finally getting into the ring, where into the big screen scene head on with a plan, because before this, it was just Man of Steel, and you have your people who loved it, you have your people who hated it. And so, being so close to something that, like Deadpool, which was received really well, I can see why you'd be nervous. I mean, you're pretty much what they're doing now is it's finally getting into the ring with Marvel, and I can see how it can make them nervous, because they haven't done this. And I mean, the last time they Dark Knight Rises, I'm sorry, wasn't as great, but it stood well in theaters. The Dark Knight did really well. I think they monetarily they did fine, and they're gonna start off their universe with something as epic as a showdown between Batman v Superman. And I texted you guys a couple of days ago about this, but I can sense that they have a little bit of fear of it being received not very well with all the marketing that they're throwing at, all these interviews and clips and reveals, et cetera, et cetera. Like, oh, guys, like, we promise it's going to be good. Look, it's going to have this. Look, it's going to have that. So, I can see why they're nervous, but for them to be worried that it's not going to be a success with the reports earlier that all the executives at Warner Brothers had seen it before, and when it finished, they all left with a standing ovation because of how great they thought it was, and then we get this report. So I don't know what to necessarily believe, but I can understand them being nervous, because they're going into an area where they haven't been yet, which is now they're going to actually have multiple heroes on the big screen, and you're really going to be able to judge Marvel with DC on the big screen, because now you're not just dealing with Superman, now it's Superman, Batman, we're going to get some sort of Aquaman, and other small cameos. So it's crunch time for them. So let's see if they can make money. I think they're going to be fine, and they're going to continue with their path. It does raise an eyebrow, though, to say that Jesse Eisenberg is going to be one of the strengths of the movie, because I'm going to just have to see that.
Yeah, and I wonder about the timing. You know, this report comes out supposedly, you know, Friday or whatever. I'm sure a lot of those executives had seen Deadpool already, but that was before, you know, the massive successful weekend that it had. So you just wonder how much the timing of Deadpool coming out and you know, even before it was released, it was, you know, with advanced ticket sales and whatever metrics they use to predict what a movie's going to make over the weekend. Everybody was, you know, people in the know were pretty sure that Deadpool was going to be wildly successful, and they were correct. And so I just wonder how much of this worry is because Deadpool did so well. And in a way, like, as far as tonality goes, it's kind of in direct contrast to what they're doing you know, like I said, Batman v Superman seems like a movie that takes itself very, very seriously, whereas Deadpool certainly didn't. It was very irreverent, self-deprecating, you know, multiple times Deadpool making comments in the movie that were like meta-textual comments about, you know, the movies themselves. So it certainly didn't take itself seriously.
But a movie like that only works with a character like Deadpool.
Yes. Oh, you're right, 100%.
You know, you can't do that, especially with Batman in a Batman film. Unless you're featuring the Joker, you can't joke around very much. Most of those villains have a very serious tone because of all the tragedy that's in their background. So, yeah, maybe they should have flip-flopped Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman. But at the same time, would you want Suicide Squad going up against a Ryan Reynolds project that was just fueled by so much passion? It's something to think about. I just think that they're just making too much of it. I'm not sure how great this article's sources are.
Well, I think Suicide Squad came out a month after Deadpool. That it, you know, it's not directly competing against it. I think I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, that much more excited to see Suicide Squad just because you know, that last trailer really, really hooked me, much more so than the Batman v Superman trailers have to this point.
I will say that the last trailer that they released for Batman v Superman, I thought maybe they should have just released that one trailer, done any other trailer, because that one trailer, it was amazing compared to the other two.
It was certainly Batman centric.
Yeah, I think of us three, I had the least faith in this movie so far from what I've seen, and I think that trailer definitely made me a little bit more excited about the movie, because the previous trailers for it kind of just, the first one that came out that was talking, you heard Ma Kent talking to Superman, it kind of just reminded me of what they did wrong in Man of Steel, and then the second one, it kind of turned me off with the Lex Luthor and stuff. But man, when I saw Batman fighting those guys in that third trailer, it reminded me of the Arkham games. It was so brutal. It was awesome. I think that makes me actually really excited to see Ben Affleck's Batman in this movie.
Yeah, same here. I just kind of wish I hadn't seen the other trailers now. Like, man, I just wish I would just seen this one and not the other two, because the other two trailers kind of raise eyebrows here and there, but this one, man, you have a very proactive Alfred, which is what we're seeing now a lot in like Gotham and in comics, and you have Superman not liking Batman at all. It's very, very obvious, and then just plain simple classic Batman, and I thought that was great. That's all you needed.
You like, this is kind of a little off topic here, but you like the more active Alfred, Manny, who maybe not, you know, in the comics, classically, he was, an actor, performed in the theater, and maybe had a little bit of, you know, experience in the war, but wasn't, you know, like a badass, let's say, but there's been that trend, and it's one of the reasons I'm surprised you haven't read the Batman Earth One stories that Geoff Johns has done, because in those books, in that DC universe continuity, multiverse, whatever you want to call it, he's like former like special forces, mm-hmm. for like, you know, MI6 or whatever, and he's like a total badass.
No, I definitely prefer the more active Alfred. It just makes more sense. Bruce Wayne as Batman, as a badass as he is, you know, he needs that person, not even Oracle, not even his family member, kind of to really back him up. And there's been nobody like Alfred for him throughout his life, and it's because of that I like that he's more proactive.
Yeah, more than just a nursemaid there to, you know, bandage him up. Fair enough. Well, something else you said, Manny, kind of leads into our next point on the show notes here, and that's Deadpool's success meaning more R ratings. Like you were saying, the irreverent tone of the movie, you know, works for a character like Deadpool. I think if you had Batman, if you had Superman, but especially Batman, like at some point in Batman versus Superman breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience, I think it would come across as very corny to the point that, you know, the audience might even groan.
It wouldn't work, I don't think. Yeah. It's just not how the character works.
Exactly. It's just going to come across as corny and like, really? Did they really just do that?
Plus, Deadpool breaks the fourth wall in the comics, too, so it's not like
he
was just first doing this in the movie, either.
Yeah, exactly. And so for that reason, I think it makes a lot of sense that Deadpool got the R rating, but Hollywood being Hollywood and no one being able to really... I mean, look at how long it took Ryan Reynolds to make this movie. I mean, he fought for years through the development of the movie.
10 years is how long it took him. He was lobbying for 10 years, and the people with the suits above him were just like, no, nobody will ever go see that. Nobody wants the R-rated superhero movie. That's for kids.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds, huge Deadpool fan, is like, no, if we're going to make this movie, we got to make it right. It has to be true to the character. That means an R rating. And he fought, and you know, he got the right writers and the right director. And, you know, from the opening scenes, and we should say in the interest of full disclosure that this is going to be a spoiler review of Deadpool once we get into it. But even right from the start with the credits, the opening credits, the way they did it without using anyone's actual name was brilliant. It totally suited the tone of Deadpool. But Hollywood being Hollywood sees the success, and so immediately they're like, oh, well, it's going to work, you know. This is what people want now, all of a sudden. You know, they can't see past their own noses to the fact that the reason it worked in this particular instance, the reason that they were able, that it's so successful, is because, yes, they did do something different, but it was appropriate for the character. And so now there's all these rumors that there's going to be a lot more R-rated superhero movies coming. Wolverine, which I can kind of see could make sense. You know, Wolverine doesn't necessarily cuss in the comics, but you could kind of see that it could work, you know, and especially if the R rating is because of, you know, like violence and gore and, you know, because, you know, that's just the way Wolverine can go. It lends it to that. But then they're talking about things like Gambit and the Fantastic Four, another Fantastic Four
reboot. Yeah, I heard about that. That seems like a terrible idea to me.
Yeah, there's no reason. It doesn't suit the characters. It's going to end up being jarring, and for people that are fans of these characters, they're going to go in there and look and be like, well, that's not, you know, it's too much of a departure. It seems gratuitous, and it just doesn't work. But Hollywood being Hollywood, you know, they see, oh, look, R rating, it's getting publicity, blah, blah, blah. You know, yeah, for certain characters, maybe it could work. You know, like I said, Wolverine, Punisher's another one. But if this is the way it goes and it starts swinging to this direction to go R rating, I just I don't see it being. I don't see them being successful. I mean, when you go to something like a Justice League movie, I mean, that's more of like family fair. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It should be a big summer blockbuster popcorn flick where the whole family can go and enjoy it. It to make something like that R rated, it just doesn't make sense. At least in my opinion.
Well, I think that, I read this article that James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy...
Yeah, I read that. I read that, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, that basically that Hollywood's going to learn the wrong lessons from Deadpool, and that the article that he read about the critics saying that all of this stuff was new and that it was refreshing to see that a Marvel movie poke fun at other Marvel movies and at properties that are inside the Marvel universe and stuff. And he was saying that basically that it has been like, what do you think Ant-Man was? What do you think Guardians of the Galaxy was? It's not that it was so new. I mean, nothing had done it to the extent that Deadpool has done, but some movies have done it to some extent already. And that now that he feels that people are going to start trying to force stuff into R rating just because that this Deadpool movie did well in the R rating. I think that if a character can benefit, like, if the character in the comics, if you wouldn't give that comic to somebody who was under 17 or to a kid, I think that would deserve an R rating. But if it's a comic that you could give to a kid and let the kid read, there's no reason for it to be an R rating because there's no reason for those characters to go and do stuff that they wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, I mean, if Hollywood, they look at the success of Deadpool and they say, this movie's successful because it's a novelty, it's an R-rated movie that is for adults and it resonates. then they're learning. That's the wrong lesson. That's what James Gunn's, you know, point was. The movie's not a success, not a huge success, for the studio and for Ryan Reynolds and for the creators involved because of the R rating. It's a success and it's a good movie because it's true to the character. And in order to be true to the character, it just so happens that, you know, Deadpool is a mature character who breaks the fourth wall and is very irreverent and vulgar and violent. And so an R rating was suitable for that. It's not a success because of the R rating. In a way, it's a success despite the R rating. It's a success because it was true to the character. And if you take a character where you're forcing an R rating just to get the attention or just because you think it's what people want and you're not true to the character, you're actually doing the exact opposite of what Deadpool did in terms of aiming for the right audience and trying to capture that character's fans so that the movie will be a success. You know, it's the reason I didn't like Man of Steel, because they took, you know, what I loved about Superman and totally flipped it. You know, he's a heroic character who symbolizes hope and you know, the better side of things, the good side of things, the light side of things, and instead they turn around and made him dark. And for me, it didn't work. So, I guess at the end of the day, we'll have to wait and see. It won't be, you know, years until we know. You know, movies and Hollywood they're kind of its own thing. It takes years a lot of times for something to come, you know, from a script all the way to the big screen and we get a chance to see it. So, it takes a lot of time to develop these things, and with billions of dollars at stake, hindsight's 20/20. So,
one last quick thing. Do you guys think that Warner Brothers are kicking themselves for not making Suicide Squad a R rating now?
I don't know that they are kicking themselves. Because from all accounts, everybody that's seen it, you know, loves what they've done. I guess it would just be a matter of how close was it? I mean, we're not privy to those things. We don't know what rating it got when they first submitted it. You know, a lot of times they'll submit it and it could have got an R. Okay, it's an R, but if you cut this, we'll give you, you know, PG-13. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say without seeing it.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Manny? Anything to add?
No, just I just really hope they're not jumping the gun to the R rating fad because of Deadpool. In reality, when you rate a film, I think rated R, you're cutting yourself short, because you're taking away an audience of younger people that can't go watch it, and sometimes adults won't go watch it because they can't go watch it with their kids, or they just have certain feelings of things they don't want to see in rated R movies, so they skip it altogether. So, if it suits the character, like you guys have been talking about, fine. Deadpool is a character that really needed a rated R, and we knew that from reading the book. But I mean, why are you going to give Wolverine a rated R movie when you haven't in so many years? You're going to do something that is unnecessary. A character like Punisher, the two movies that came out, that, I mean, the character is very dark. It deserves to be rated R. But if you're going to start doing that, you better have the right characters and for the right reason. If not, you're just going to have a movie full of moments that are very forced and unnecessary and not true to the character, which, like you said, Jace, it's just going to do the reverse of what Deadpool did. It works because of the character, not because of the rating.
Yeah, and the one thing I'm concerned about, like you said, they've already had two Wolverine movies that weren't rated R, and Wolverine, you know, despite the violent history of the character, you know, between the X-Men cartoon and video games and such, you know, there are a lot of, you know, really young kids, you know, 5 to 7 who know Wolverine, love Wolverine.
Oh yeah.
Have seen the first two movies, whatever. And now, you're definitely limiting yourself. And in that perspective, it doesn't necessarily make sense to, you know, if you've done the previous ones, PG-13 or whatever, and now you're going to switch. You know, we've heard with, you know, long before Deadpool came out, you know, with the petition that was started to, you know, release a different version so, you know, kids could go and see it. It doesn't necessarily suit the character. To me, if your kid's, you know, 10, 11 years old, you shouldn't be reading the Deadpool comic anyway. You know, there's too much violence, too many, you know, comments that are filled with, like, sexual innuendo and such. It's just not suitable. So, yeah, to me, I just don't understand. And I have a perfect example. I saw somebody posted on Facebook today. They were complaining. They had posted on their Facebook, "I'm so disappointed. You know, I took my 9-year-old to see Deadpool. We had to leave after, you know, the first 15 minutes or whatever because, you know, it just wasn't suitable for him."
That's their own fault.
I feel, though, wait, yeah. Let me finish. Yeah. I feel so bad for him. You know, he loves Deadpool, really wanted to be able to, for him to be able to stay and enjoy it. I really wish that the movie studios would let parents know that, you know, these movies aren't suitable for young kids. You know, it's not right. And the first comment was in the thread was, "You mean like giving it an R rating?" I mean, the studios tell you right there. Not appropriate for kids under 17. And you took your 9-year-old, and what did you expect? To me, you're a complete moron.
Yep.
End of story. You know, you're bitching that he couldn't go, and, you know, it wasn't appropriate for him, and you want the studios to like, put a warning on the movie. That's what the rating system is for. It had an R rating, you moron.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Ridiculous.
It does make me excited, though, that maybe we get some other titles that might not have been greenlit as movies, like maybe get a true-to-the-character Spawn movie sometime soon, or even maybe, I heard about this, is maybe an Invincible movie. I thought that might be cool.
Hi, Deadpool here with an important public service announcement. This is your brain. Actually, it's a chimichanga, but I'm making a point, because this is your brain on IMAX. Bigger is better, right? Hear the music. Woo!
All right, let's talk about Deadpool. For me, if I had to sum it up in one word, I'd say fun.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
So let's just go around and give our initial impressions. What you liked, if there's something you didn't necessarily think worked. Go ahead, Manny.
Well, I liked from the... We had talked about it a little bit right now. The opening credits just really set the tone for what was going to be going on with them poking fun at the directors and whatnot. And then just that opening sequence of kind of being stuck in time and all the things going on all at once, I was just like, man, this is gonna be good. So overall, I really enjoyed it. My wife was not very superhero into superhero movies and things like that, comic book movies, let's just put it that way. She had a really good time watching it. Just because a lot of the references were just so easy to follow, and the jokes, and you can really tell Ryan Reynolds, that's like, yeah, that's 10 years of wanting a movie made. I just think that, to me, it got to the point where I thought to myself, I can watch this movie even if it didn't have a villain or necessarily a plot. If I have Deadpool riding around town with the cab driver doing odd things, I think that would even be good enough just because of how good Ryan Reynolds played Wade Wilson. It was a really, really good time in a time when a lot of people were starting to think that comic book character movies it's over, that it's done. They're getting a little bit washed up. So it was really refreshing. It was fun. It was nice to have a comic book character with an R rating, just because they were so free to do whatever they wanted, to say whatever they want, show whatever they wanted. They didn't really hold back on anything. It was like you guys said, it was fun.
What are your thoughts, Jin?
I really liked it. I went in with kind of, I wouldn't say high expectations, but with decent expectations because of all the buzz that I'd been hearing about it, and I can say that it definitely met those expectations. There wasn't much to it, but I definitely think that Ryan Reynolds, I mean, I don't think that there's anybody in the world who could play Deadpool better than he could, and I think that he's definitely, I mean, it was a great movie, I think. It was exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah, I didn't have much expectations either, and in fact, I didn't even plan on seeing it up until real recently when I saw the last trailer that was released. That was actually the first trailer I saw, and I agree with you guys. The passion that Ryan Reynolds has for the character was so obvious, kind of like the role he was born to play, and for that reason, because I've never really been that much of a fan of the character of Deadpool. I guess I just usually take my superheroes a little more seriously. But yeah, I saw this trailer. I thought, yeah, I think I'm going to go see this one. And yeah, it was fun. With all the buildup and how well it did over the weekend, I was expecting a little more, like, story-wise. There wasn't really that much to the story when you really break it down. But one of the brilliant things that the filmmakers did, and I have a feeling that this was mostly Tim Miller, or maybe the scriptwriters maybe contributed as well, was the non-linear approach they took to telling the story really helped to break it up so that you kind of don't realize that as far as the story goes, there's not a whole lot there. It seems like it was like the kind of the plot of an hour TV show, you know, like a normal weekly TV series, maybe, you know, the start of a new show. But because of the way they broke it up and the pacing they used, you know, they were able to stretch it out and, you know, fill a 2-hour movie. So, yeah, very well done. The special effects, we'll talk a little bit about that, were well done as well. But yeah, right from the start, that opening scene, all the action, and it, you know, just like I said, fun. Let's talk a little bit about the changes to the origin. It had bits of the classic origin from the comics. You know, Deadpool's one of those characters. Marvel kind of took a cue from Wolverine and didn't. A lot of his origin is shrouded in his past is shrouded in mystery, and you don't know things. And different writers have added bits and pieces to his backstory over the years, but we really don't have like a definitive definition. So they played around with the timing. You know, he did have a girlfriend at one point that used to be a prostitute, and he did get cancer and you know, try to get that cured or whatever, but they totally skipped over the whole Weapon X thing. You know, they didn't put that any of that in there. And yeah, just the timing of things, like when he gets the cancer, when the girlfriend is there, you know, she ends up with powers in the comics. So they definitely messed around with it. It didn't necessarily, that kind of stuff didn't necessarily bother me. I think it worked for the film and, you know, working within the constraints that they had. One thing to also consider as far as the story goes, like Manny mentioned, and Jaden as well, it took a long time for Ryan Reynolds to convince Fox to make this movie. And considering the budgets of superhero films now, this movie was made on a budget of only $58 million, which is, you know, pocket change these days as far as movies go. But that also limited the filmmakers in, you know, what they could do as far as which characters they could have and such. And at one point, Deadpool even makes a mention of it in the movie.
Yeah. So like, there's only two of you here. It's like the studio couldn't afford any other X-Men.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm certainly not going to blame the filmmakers for that they had those constraints, but we're still able to, you know, give a relatively good origin. And the other thing is, you know, you're having people go and see this movie who aren't comic readers and aren't familiar with him from the comics at all. So any changes they make are for the sake of, you know, streamlining it and, you know, for the sake of having this limited 2-hour window to tell the story. So, I mean, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Deadpool's origin in the comics, but how did you feel about the origin of the movie and any changes that stood out to you, Jaden?
Well, the more I've thought about it, the more it's made sense to me. I mean, the whole Weapon X thing, I think that they probably would have put something in there about that if it hadn't have been for the origin Wolverine movie that kind of just totally destroyed Deadpool, like just jacked Deadpool up completely with the Weapon X thing. So I think they just kind of wanted to distance themselves and make sure that nobody really knew that it was the same character from that movie, basically. I don't really mind it. I mean, it makes... Like, it's like you said, it's I think it's better for people who don't really know the character and when the movie and were expecting more of, like, a plot.
What about you, Manny?
Yeah, I don't know much about his origin. Matter of fact, I've never read a Deadpool book, let alone even picked one up, period. So, all I know of the character is from brief cameos I see on, or strips that I've seen online, or just all the marketing for this movie. And then just everything I know from all the cosplayers I've seen throughout the years of, and so I have an idea of who he is, but as far as his origin, it was done okay. And I completely agree with Jaden that they wanted to have nothing to do with the Wolverine movie, because I remember when that movie came out. I didn't even realize that was supposed to be Deadpool when I first watched it, number one, because I wasn't into Deadpool at all. So, I just think that they didn't want to have anything to do with it. Some of the comments I have I'll talk about later. But as far as its origin, I was fine with it.
Did you guys see that Ryan Reynolds crashed the press junket for the upcoming Eddie the Eagle movie that Hugh Jackman is in?
Oh yeah, I saw that. That was great.
And he was asking, you know, Ryan Reynolds was, playing the role of the Hollywood reporter and asking Hugh Jackman questions about the Wolverine Origins movie. It was pretty funny. One thing I did notice that I didn't necessarily pull me out of the story, but it's just something I noticed, you know. Like I said, it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it, but, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm going to nitpick because it's kind of what I do. Part of what gave Deadpool his powers, the treatment, which I thought it was well done in the movie, it was portrayed well, supposedly drove him insane. It's part of the reason, you know, he does what he does and, you know, smarts off and cracks jokes or whatever, the one-liners and the... And, you know, he's got his healing factor that's, you know, so amped up to the point of basically making him, like, immortal. So he doesn't necessarily have to be serious all the time in the face of mortal danger. But to me, there didn't seem like there was much of a change in the character of Wade Wilson / Deadpool. He was wisecracky and funny before, which I kind of felt like he should have been a little more serious. I mean, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I get it, you know, that's just kind of his shtick. And it certainly was enjoyable, and he had, you know, a lot of funny lines before he became Deadpool. But it just, because of that, there didn't necessarily seem to be much of a differentiation. And so it was like that part almost was like it was thrown out, you know, he's not insane, or is he insane, or was he insane before? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, in the comics, it's clear that in a way the guy's nuts. And, other than the part where he's got the knife stuck in his head and he sees a little cartoon characters, you know, around his girl, it didn't, you know, that aspect was kind of, it just wasn't there, I guess you'd say. I mean, either he's crazy the whole time or he's not, you know. Or the procedure that gave him his powers didn't make him any more crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that they did that mainly for plot purposes. I think it'd be a lot harder to make a movie that's more of like a sequential normal action superhero movie if he was just plain insane. So I think that there's mostly, I think that's mostly why they made him not quite as insane as in the comics.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't ever break the fourth wall before the procedure. So, I mean, there was that that they used to differentiate, but again, it just didn't seem like the tone was in the character was much different. How do you think about it, Manny?
I think maybe it's more of a their cinematic approach to the character. It just works better for the screen, I think, and for the plot, and they wanted to have, especially because of the way that they told the story, like Jaden was saying. You kind of didn't want him differentiating too much because you're already having fun with Deadpool, and then you got to go back into a serious Wade Wilson, and then you got to go back to Deadpool again. So I think to keep the flow of the movie, I think they just kind of left him the way he was, which I was fine with.
Yeah, I kind of wish I knew somebody that was a huge that Deadpool's their favorite character, and they, you know, have read every Deadpool comic, and get their take on it. You know, that would be been interesting. Another thing that I didn't like, but again, not enough to ruin the movie for me, was Colossus. What do you think of Colossus, Manny?
I thought it was fine. That's one of the X-Men. I've never been a big fan of Colossus. He's one of my lesser favorite X-Men, I guess you can say. But kind of playing the parent, I guess, in the movie, he was fine. He wasn't exceptional or anything, but he was a little one-dimensional. But with Wade Wilson kind of just dominating, it didn't really bother me.
What about visually?
It's all CGI. I mean, it was okay.
I mean, they poked fun at that at the beginning of the movie, too, also. So, I mean, they understood that it was, like, kind of a cheesy character, I think.
Yeah.
But I do think it had something to do with the fact that... This was something I wanted to bring up earlier. The fact that the studio didn't necessarily have any faith in this film, they didn't want to tie it with any of their X-Men actively. So I think this was their safe approach to say, well, here's an issue that you guys can mess with. But I think now, with how successful this movie is, I think the studio is probably kicking themselves for not including more X-Men, because even as cameos or whatever, because this was a great platform to get 20th Century Fox a little bit of help with the X-Men.
Yeah, I think a Wolverine cameo would have been somewhere along the sensibility of...
Yeah, that would have been great. Even if it was like something as simple as Hugh Jackman as Wolverine in a bar or something like that, and Deadpool comes
like in the in First Class when they went to the bar and it was he just told them to F off.
Yeah, so yeah, something as simple as that would have been great.
Yeah, but something like that, or what comes to mind is that scene from the very first X-Men movie where Mystique had impersonated Wolverine on Liberty Island. And then the actual Wolverine meets back up, and Cyclops is like, "How do we know it's really you? You're a dick." I mean, it's just such a great, you know, just a great moment. It just could have had, you know, just a moment like that. Like maybe when Deadpool showed up in the mansion to ask for help, and you know, could have had Cyclops and or Wolverine just kind of brush him off and be like, you know, whatever, you're Deadpool. We don't trust you. We don't like you. You know, go screw yourself. And Colossus being, you know, more kind of a noble hero, you know, going, no, I'm willing to go and help you out.
You know, when he goes to the school, it would have been if Wolverine was teaching a class and he's outside the window, like, mooning him or something, or if Xavier's teaching a class and he's, like, behind him or just something, you know, a little bit more X-Men in it, that would have been great. And I think that would have gone a long way.
Yeah, you have any more thoughts about Colossus, Jaden?
I didn't really care for the character that much in the movie, but I do think that, I mean, his voice actor was very stereotypical of Russian accent and everything. I think that the fact that Colossus was in it made it a lot of funny moments in the movie, like when he handcuffs Deadpool, and Deadpool makes a reference to 127 hours. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, or he starts dragging him off. We're going to see Professor X. McAvoy or Stewart, these timelines confuse me. That was funny, too. But yeah, like visually, I hated it. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was done as well as it could have been done. But again, limited budget. But the thing I disliked most about the character, was that stereotypical, like, they got the nobility part right. That they nailed that. Colossus is a very noble character, but he's also, you know, being that he's kind of the strong guy on the team, he doesn't necessarily get the credit for being as intelligent as he is. But Peter Rasputin as a character is very intelligent and very well spoken, and he never speaks in the broken English way that they had this, you know, actor speak, and that really bothered me. I didn't like it at all. It's one thing to have him speak in a Russian accent, but you know, even when you were seeing Russian gangsters in other movies, they have better, you know, English grammar than this guy did. And I did not like that at all. I disliked that. As bad as I thought he looked visually, that for me was the worst part about him. I do think having him in there, you know, was some great comic relief. You know, especially the crotch jokes. Man, your poor wife. And when Deadpool, you know, won't give up on trying to beat his ass. And also, I thought that the fight between Colossus and Angel Dust was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty cool fight, too. Especially when she, like, has her shirt come down a little bit, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, unfortunate placement of the hand for Colossus. I would have liked to have seen a little more.
Straight up nobility from the man, though. You gotta give him that.
Yeah. The next thing I want to talk about is the humor of the movie. Obviously, we all think it was a really fun movie, fun and funny. Both the humorous moments were really done well and very appropriate to the character. And I feel like this movie needed that because, again, I think if you were to take out and remove a lot of that humor, first of all, you're not necessarily being true to the character, and I think if you do that, then the fact that there really isn't much to the story becomes that much more obvious. What do you think, Manny?
No, I think you're right. Because, I mean, the zingers just keep coming, and whether he's talking to his girl, whether he's talking to his friend Weasel, right?
Yep.
And I mean, even what kind of impressed me is even in those dark moments when they have him in the chamber, and Ajax is just torturing him. I mean, the zingers just keep coming, and I was like, man, this guy is relentless, which I was fine with, and it's the reason why I was saying earlier. That if this movie the movie necessarily didn't even have a great plot. Like you said earlier, that's like a TV plot almost. It was just great, and it was all. I thought the jokes were all placed in the right moments when he's talking about don't give me a animated suit or don't shut my mouth or. Or just different things here and there when you talk about when he says Colossus you brought it up we're gonna go see Professor X like which one or you know just different things or one of my favorite moments is he takes off his mask and it's that staple of the there's just when you think he's going to have a serious, every time you think it's going to be a serious moment, it just comes right back and hits you with another one. So, but that's the character, and that's what everybody went to see. That's what it was marketed, and that's what they delivered. The humor I thought was on point.
What do you think, Jaden?
I think the humor is great. I mean, I was laughing almost throughout the entire movie. I think that barely any of the jokes fell flat. And I think that it was very true to the character, at least from what I've seen. Like, I think the humor was very similar to the humor that they have in the all other Deadpool types of things.
Yeah, and a good range, you know, good range of jokes anybody will get. And then, you know, a level where if you're a comic reader, you get a little more out of it. Yeah. And then if you're, you know, a big comic nerd, you know, then you're going to get all of it. And things are going to be on another level for you. I do, you know, like we mentioned, the humor did make up for some of the weaker parts of the story, help carry the film. Now, Ryan Reynolds and T.J. Miller, a lot of their stuff was ad-libbed and improvised. I saw an interview T.J. Miller did, and he said a lot of the stuff that they used, they got so vulgar and crass that they couldn't even really be used in the movie. So I'm looking forward to the unrated DVD release, when I'm sure we'll get a lot of that stuff as extras. So that should be pretty funny. And also, I think just, you know, Deadpool is, you know, a funny character with the one-liners. And so, again, it was appropriate for the character. And I think if you took a lot of the humor out, like I said, it wouldn't cover up some of the weaker parts of the plot as much. It wouldn't feel as much like an irreverent Deadpool movie. I think it would be much more of the traditional kind of superhero movies that we've seen. I mean, if you cut out a lot of those character moments, a lot of those humorous moments of the interactions, you know, you're cutting out time out of the movie. And how do you feel that? Well, you probably feel it in the montage area where Deadpool is actually searching because for the guy who turned him into Deadpool. Because supposedly that happened over a period of more than a year. Because at the end, we learn that it's been, you know, he says to his girl, it's been, you know, a rough couple of years. So we know that that took time. But in the movie, it's compressed just to a few minutes. So I think that's where you would go as a filmmaker if you had more time. But you want to keep it on the same budget. So some more fight scenes, some more action scenes, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Because then maybe we get more of the really cool slow motion scenes like that opening scene in the SUVs and such. But I think the problem with doing that is now you've turned something very original and something very different and refreshing, like you said, Manny, into something that's much more a standard, typical superhero movie where, you know, he's got the end goal that he's trying to reach and he's got to go through step A, B, C, D to get there. You know, it becomes even more formulaic. And I think that's what the humor really did in this movie. It made it stand out. It made it different. And it really mixed up the formula so that as you're watching it, you don't realize that really, yeah, the movie only has maybe the plot of an hour-long TV show. So again, credit to Ryan Reynolds and all the filmmakers involved that wanted to stay true to Deadpool and made really smart choices in that way to really get the humor across. How'd you guys feel about Deadpool's look, Jaden?
I think it was spot on. I think of all of the superhero movies that we've had come out since superhero movies have existed, I think it was the closest to the most true to the actual character. And I also loved that with a Deadpool movie, you really have to be able to put a lot of emotion into his face, even when he's wearing his mask, because he's always wearing his mask. And I thought they did a great job of that.
Yeah, I noticed it because I saw it twice. I saw it again today. And that was one thing that I specifically went in looking at because I thought about it after seeing it the first time. Clearly, you know, it's a thick mask. It's the leather around the eyes and then the white eyes. That's not something, and kind of ridges where the eyebrows would be. That's not something that realistically in real life, you wouldn't see those ridges go up and down if Ryan Reynolds was raising his eyebrows. You wouldn't see his eyes get bigger when he's surprised or, you know, or laughing or squint down. You know, you just wouldn't. It's not, you know, it's a leather, you know, pieces of leather, thick leather around his eyes. That's not going to move like that. So clearly that was something that they did, you know, post-production, whatever, CGI, to make it much more like it is in the comics. And it's not something that you notice really as being, oh, look, that's a special effect, but it works so perfectly because like you said, being that he's wearing this full face mask, the eyes, you know, and the eyebrows are really the only way he can show emotion. And so, yeah, I thought it was just expertly done. What do you think, Benny?
Well, I thought it was just such a great costume, first of all. And then the moment that the look really, really sold me was when he looks back and he sees that Ajax is gone, and then he grabs his hands and he puts them on his face and kind of doing that the gasping, and man, the whole expression of his face, I was like, man, this is dead on. And just throughout the film, just his like you guys were talking about, his expressions, it was done so well, so true to the character, that I loved it. It's not something you see often. Usually when superhero finally makes it to the big screen, there's some director or the writers make some choices of their vision of the character, but obviously I think this time they just wanted to stay as true as possible.
Yeah,
it was done really, really well.
Yeah, if there's any change at all, maybe his costume was a shade or two darker red, but
yeah,
negligible difference. Yeah, really. I mean, honestly, when you think about it, you know, credit Rob Liefeld for making a really classic costume that didn't, you know, a lot of times the reason that they change the costumes for the big screen is because, you know, they're wearing these, in the comics, these characters are wearing these very brightly colored costumes, these primary colors that when you see them on the big screen, you know, live action, they just look corny, you know, and this certainly didn't look corny. And as far as that scene you mentioned, Manny, yeah, perfectly done when he's doing the double, triple, quadruple take, you know, looking back and forth between Colossus and where Ajax was. I mean, I literally could see the panel in my head with, you know, the motion blurred lines around his head, you know, to show that movement of him looking back and forth. Yeah, a really perfect Deadpool moment on the screen.
I really liked the way he developed his costume too, because like I heard when he says that he makes his costume red so people can't see him bleed, that seems kind of like a whatever. I don't like, it doesn't really matter if they see you bleed, it's just you're gonna heal anyway. But then when you see him with that white sweatshirt on and it gets all covered in blood, and the woman he was living with tells him to use what is it, lemon and seltzer water to get out the blood. Yeah, and I thought that was pretty great.
How did you guys feel about the tone of the movie as far as the romantic love interest? Did that work for you?
Yeah, it worked for me. I had no idea that I can't remember what her name is.
Marina Baccarin.
Marina Baccarin was in the movie. I mean, I really love her character on Gotham. I think she's a great actress on that show. And I thought that she did a great job. I mean, they're both crazy, but they were really good. They were really on each other's wavelength. I thought it was interesting. I wasn't expecting it.
What about you, Manny?
I thought it was good. It gives him the motives, obviously, of why he needs to cure his cancer, why he wants to continue fighting. You know, it moves the story along, the plot, I guess. And I thought she did a great job as well. I didn't really have any... I mean, she's like Jaden said, she's as crazy as he is. From the beginning to the end, it's really consistent. Nothing much to add on that.
Yeah, I found it interesting. It certainly makes the character relatable, like you said, Manny. You can understand his motivations. So I think being that a lot of people that are going to go see the movie aren't necessarily that familiar with Deadpool, so you kind of do need to, for him to have, you know, motivations you can understand for why he's doing what he's doing. Now, again, that's something that's different from the comic. In the comic, he's insane, and he doesn't really need a motivation other than he's doing what he wants to because the guy's crazy. But like you said, Manny, this is the cinematic version. It's a little different than what we see in the comics. For me, it just... The one thing that stood out for me was that... It really, when you look at it, it's kind of a happy ending. And as far as the comic book version of the character, it doesn't necessarily suit him. He doesn't. Deadpool's not a character that gets to have a lot of happy endings, and that's kind of what kind of endears him. And you know, you put him in these impossible situations, and he still keeps a sense of humor, and you know, cracks wise. So I guess I wonder where they're going to go from here with the sequel, because obviously, you know, especially with the after credits scene, they were planning on doing a sequel. And of course, you know, being the runaway success of it, of course, we're going to see more Deadpool, but he's not a character that, you know, can go out and do what he does and then come home to, you know, a wife or a girlfriend at the end of the day, you know, honey, I'm home. It for me, you know, even with the cinematic version, it just doesn't work. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. But I do agree with both of you that Marina Baccarin is a good actress. She seems to be one of these actresses, much kind of like her former co-star, Alan Tudyk. You know, they both kind of got their big break on Firefly and or the Serenity movie, and have done much in the same genre since, you know. She followed that with a turn as Anna in the V sci-fi television series that was a revival of the old 80s sci-fi. And then, of course, she plays Dr. Leslie Tompkins on Gotham. So, and she's been in some other things. She was also in Stargate SG-1. So she's kind of stayed in that same, you know, genre of sci-fi and comic book kind of films. So, yeah, very, very well acted the entire movie, I thought. It was well cast, I would say, from Gina Carano as Angel Dust. I can't remember the guy's name who played Ajax, but also T.J. Miller as Weasel. Yeah, just really, and the cab driver as well. He was good comic relief. So
yeah, if they don't have him in the next movie, they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. He was really great, Dopinder. Let's talk a little bit about the villain again. Something I feel was a little on the weaker side, but was covered up by the fact that Ryan Reynolds did such a great job, and again, the humor of the movie kind of glosses over these plot holes about the movie. But still, it seems to be the Achilles heel. Even though this isn't a Marvel Studios movie, for me, and I know you've said this to me before as well, Manny, these Marvel villains, it seems to be their Achilles heel. They just can't seem to get them right. They just come across as so two-dimensional and lacking motivation. And here's the problem I had with the villain. You know, well-acted, menacing, you know, credible threat, but the motivations just don't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I understand. Okay, so you know, he cracks jokes at you, and so you don't like the guy, and he's disrupting your operations. Okay, I understand that. But let's get down to the root of it. So Ajax and Angel, and especially, you know, when he teams up with Angel, incredibly powerful, they could kind of do whatever they wanted as far as, you know, monetary gain. They're running this organization that's making these superpowered slaves, and they're selling them off to the highest bidder. I assume because they want the money. Because there certainly doesn't seem to be any other reason for them to do it. But there seems to be a lot easier ways for people like them that have these abilities to go and either just take the money directly or go and take the things that they're going to use the money for directly. So they don't really need to go through all the trouble of making these superpowered slaves and auctioning them off, right? I mean, see what I'm getting at?
Yeah,
it doesn't really make any sense when you break it down.
Yeah, I mean, the villain was very two dimensional, but I feel like that is kind of remedied by the fact that I think that they made a lot of references to the fact that, like, it's like at the beginning credits, it even said another British villain.
Yeah, like, British
yeah.
A British bad guy.
I think they just didn't want him to really, like, they didn't want to bring in anybody who would overshadow Ryan Reynolds at all.
Well, I mean, some of it may have been just because, like we were saying, they wanted to keep that part of his origin the same as far as him going and getting these powers, through some shady organization. You know, originally in the comics, it's the Weapon X program. But, you know, he's looking for a cure for his cancer. He gets the powers. But you can't, you know, like we talked about, you didn't want to bring in the whole Weapon X angle to distance it from Wolverine Origins. Plus, it just, the movie would have had to be that much longer to explain it all and have it make sense. So I can understand it. But like I said, it is a weaker, the villain's motivation is a weaker part of the movie. As far as the villain, the actor doing a good job, yeah, I thought he did a good job. And, you know, the fight scenes between them were handled well, also, I felt.
And also, I think that they wanted to make it so Deadpool didn't really have, like, a good motivation throughout a lot of the movie. He kind of had more of, like, a very on the surface, like, motivation, like just the fact that he wanted to fix the way that he looked.
Yeah, because he was scared
that she wouldn't love him if he went back and he looked like that.
Yeah, he didn't want to look like an avocado anymore.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about the resolution, Manny, when Colossus is there giving his speech?
By then, I totally expected it, but a part of me was thought, oh, you know, maybe Colossus is going to get through. Oh, wait, no, he didn't. And just the fact that he threw up just made it that much better.
Yeah, I think it would have hurt the movie had, I mean, it wouldn't have been Deadpool had he listened to Colossus.
Yeah, I had no doubt in my mind that he was going to pull that trigger.
Yeah.
And how did you guys feel about Stanley's cameo?
I thought it was the best cameo that Stanley's made in any of these movies.
Yeah, it was really, really good. But you know what I thought, though, when I saw him? I was like, because, you know, recently he did an interview where he said he can't even read comics anymore. His eyesight's gotten so bad. And so, you know, he's there. And I thought, oh, man, it's too bad the guy's eyesight's going. He probably didn't even get to enjoy it. And for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, Stan Lee's cameo in the movie, he's like the announcer / DJ at the strip club that Weasel and Deadpool go and visit. So, yeah, all in all, a really fun movie. I'd give it a solid 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'd give it.
What about you, Manny? What, 8 out of 10?
Yeah, I mean, if it had a stronger plot or maybe even a stronger villain, we can go a little higher. But
I think the next one could be better.
Well, yeah, I think now the studio's going to throw money at it and do the exact opposite of what they did with this one. I know for a fact that in the next one we're going to get a whole lot more cameos, to set up some other films. And definitely it's going to be a bigger budget. And hopefully we get the taxi cab driver back, Garminder.
Dopinder.
Dopinder, sorry. Because he was great. He was fun. And then...
There's five.
Yeah. So, I mean, they just got to be careful that they don't try and do just the exact same thing over again.
Yeah, but they've got to keep the tone the same.
I'm looking forward to a movie where it's going to be a lot more of that first fight scene, I think. There's going to be a lot more of that type of action because they'll be able to afford it with, I'm guessing, probably more of like more close to $150, $200 million budget.
Yeah, or higher. I will say, so I went to see it the first time, didn't necessarily know what to expect. Saw it again the second time, and kind of was watching it with a little bit more of a critical eye, knowing the things that I kind of wanted to talk about when we reviewed it, and the things that kind of, you know, bothered me, talking points, whatever. And I would say the thing I enjoyed, like I enjoyed it all, but the thing I enjoyed the most the second time wasn't even necessarily the action scenes, but it was those Deadpool moments where it's just Ryan Reynolds being Deadpool. Like, when he's sitting on the edge of the overpass, and he's kind of, you know, rocking out to the music, and he's drawing the picture. Those, those were the things I enjoyed about it the most the second time. You know, the part where him and Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Colossus are walking into the final battle, and the cue, the music, and just, yeah, that self-awareness that Ryan Reynolds brought to the role, and the humor, yeah, really good.
Yeah, that scene was helped out by the fact that he forgot the weapons.
Yeah. Maximum effort. All right, well, we want to thank everybody for joining us. If you haven't seen Deadpool, I hope we didn't ruin it for you. Hopefully, you know, I'm going to put spoiler warnings in the post of this podcast, so don't listen to it. Hopefully no one listened to it until they've gone and seen the movie. If you want to contact us, of course, our email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook. That's us. Likewise, you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us. Go to our website. We have a Contact Us link there. You can check out Manny's blog. You can check out my blog. We have a sketch gallery there that's badly in need of updating. We need to put all our sketches on there we've got over the last year of going to conventions. Also, episodes of our YouTube channel are available there. And obviously previous episodes of our podcast. As far as convention appearances, I will be attending the Long Beach Comic Expo this coming Saturday in Long Beach, California. So if you're there, let me know. Let me know you're going to be there. Just reach out on Twitter, like I said, or Facebook. Always love to meet listeners. So that should be a good show. There's a lot of great guests. If you want more information, just go to longbeachcomicexpo.com. I know I'm looking forward to seeing some old friends, Norm Ratman, Todd Knock, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor. So that should be a really good show. It usually is very comic-centric, very much focused on comic artists. Also, Manny's going to be attending the WonderCon convention. It's going to be held at the Los Angeles Convention Center this year rather than the Anaheim Convention Center. The Anaheim Convention Center is undergoing some remodeling, and that's going to be Easter weekend coming up in March. So I believe you're going that Saturday, right, Manny?
Yeah, that's correct. I'll be there Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday the 26th. Also, there's still a chance I will be attending the inaugural Silicon Valley Comic Con in San Jose, California, but not sure on that one yet, so... If you can go to any of those shows, like I said, let us know. We'd love to meet up with you. In the meantime, go see Deadpool. Keep reading comics. If you have any comics you think we should be reading or would like us to review, don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. So thanks for joining us, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk to you next time.
Later.
Good night.